The sermon title is Learning to Wait in a World That Doesn't Like to Wait. It's a very thought-provoking kind of a psalm in that regard for us, because I think you'll agree with me that there's a lot of stress. People are more and more in a hurry, and it's evident in all kinds of ways. I was thinking today that actually, you know, there's a parts of the world where they're getting faster, but it's always been pretty fast in New York, right? I mean, when I think about New York City, it's always bustling and it's always been like that. And so a lot of us are used to that kind of hectic, you know, but if it wasn't bad already, it's getting even worse, you know, and it just seems like, how far is this going to go? You know, how much further? But people keep on coming up with technologies to do that. And I read something this week by a guy named Jason Farman. He was an author, and he said this: history is about attempts at getting rid of waiting. History has teaches that more and more people are trying to get rid of waiting. Don't want to have any more waiting, right? He said you could just follow it with all the technologies that we invent to save time, right? A lot of the technology is invented so that you can cut down on time. It is also cutting down on people doing the work, being replaced by robots and things like that in our world more and more, right? It used to be something you laughed at watching cartoons like the Flintstones when they had these modern appliances and things like that, and the Jetsons. You remember that cartoon, the Jetsons? It was like all of these modern things with robots and stuff, and we were like, ha, 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 and now it's here, right? And so there's a lot of robots around and doing things where it used to be human beings. So there's all kinds of different things happening with technology, and a lot of it is good. You know, I mean, this is not going to be an anti-technology sermon, okay? This is not going to be like, okay, we're going to go back to being, you know, in the Flintstones or something. But I think it's thought-provoking, and it's also kind of fun to think about at the same time. We have to keep a sense of humor about things. Otherwise, it can get kind of stressful, right? One of my favorite comedians is Jim Gaffigan, and he's one of the, I would say he's clean, you know, he's safe to listen to for the most part. He doesn't swear, he doesn't tell dirty jokes for the most part. It's pretty clean stuff, and he uses his imagination, but he makes fun of the world around us, you know. And so he had this little thing in his comedy routine where he talked about Starbucks. And he said, Starbucks is an amazing place. He goes, I really hate it. He said, I really hate it because they have so many different kind of drinks, right? They have so many different things and ingredients going into these coffee things. And so he said that whole, it's become a kind of a society in itself. Now I don't go to Starbucks. Okay. I actually prefer not to pay that much for a cup of coffee. But what I wanted to say is that he was talking about how it is when you go in there, and we're trying to simplify things and make them faster. But meanwhile, all of the coffees have become incredibly complicated to make, right? I mean, you go in there and you can say, I want a coffee mocha latte, you know, I mean, so the list goes on and on and on, and you stand there, and he was saying he cracks up when he listens to people going in there. It's almost like they're outdoing one another to say how complicated the drink is that they want, you know. And then the amazing thing is that the people that work there stand there and listen to all of that description of what they want, and they say, okay, I'll do it. And then they go and they start making all these drinks. But the thing that really made me laugh was that he said, all these people are running around and they're making these really complex coffees for us. And they're working their heads off, you know, and they're doing all this work. But we still would appreciate it if it would go a little faster. Right? I mean, they're killing themselves and they're doing this work for us and everything like that. But it's like, come on! Can you do it a little faster? Come on. I'm waiting too long for this. Right? And so we appreciate the fact that people are killing themselves and things are getting harder and harder for an average person in this world, but we still want it faster. We still want, and so that kind of teaches us that no matter how many things people make in the world to go faster and not to wait, we're still going to be waiting, right? I mean, there's still going to be that kind of an aspect to it. There's another thing I read this week that kind of hit me was Charlie Brown Christmas, Charlie Brown Halloween. It used to come on when we were kids. We would wait all year for it to come on TV, right? And when it came on, it was a half hour, and you'd sit down and you'd watch it, and you're like, oh, I really like that. I mean, if you're a Charlie Brown fan, and it's also a Christian message, it's a great, great show to watch around Christmas time, because Linus gets up there and he talks about the birth of Jesus. And this is on television, you know, in the United States, all over the place, the Christian message, right? But now, you can only find that on Apple. Apple is the only one that has that, the rights to Charlie Brown, right? So you have to stream it. And you can go on there, but the thing that he was saying was that you don't wait until Christmas. Now it's available all the time, so it really loses its meaning because we're not waiting for it. We're not waiting for that moment that it comes on television with excitement and looking forward to it and the idea, oh, it's only going to be on this time, and that adds some excitement to it and meaning to it even more because we're not just like able to go on any time and watch it. Right, so I think that's a very interesting thought, you know. So with all of this improvement and speed and accessibility to films and not going to the movie theater, you could just get it on TV. You don't have to go out. Well, you lose something in that as well. What you're losing is an involvement in people and gatherings and coming together and doing things like that. And you have to really work at it. Some people still go to the movies like that. But what his point was is that, you know, they're taking away something by the on-demand kind of a thing. You mean even that concept itself, on-demand. I can demand it, right? I want that. I'm going to get that. But in the waiting and comes an appreciation for things. Instead of demanding it, you're waiting, and then you appreciate it more. One last thought before we look at this great psalm together. Someone did a study of all of the things that come with speed and with having things now and wanting things right away and not waiting. And he had this conclusion. With all of these things that are happening like this and wanting things right away and demanding things, there's a loss of compassion and empathy in the world. There's a loss of compassion and empathy for people in the world because you are thinking, I want this for me fast now. So it's like you go to Starbucks and you say, give me the coffee. How come you're not ready with the coffee yet? Well, come on, hurry up. Well, I'm taking care of this other customer over here in the window and they came first, right? Yeah, but I want my coffee now. I'm in a hurry, right? So you get this kind of an idea. So you're not really thinking about other people. You're consumed with what you need and what you demand at that moment. And so really we're starting to become this society even more so of being selfish and not caring about other people. And that's dangerous, right? That's not a good thing. That's not what we want. We don't want to always just say, you know, I want this for myself now, regardless of what it's going to take. And so we have all those kind of things going on in the world around us, and some of it is good, right? If we were to teach children, okay, so you're going to get a job at Starbucks now, but when you go there, don't make them, you know, don't listen to them when you say you have to go faster. Well, you'll lose your job, right? So you have to be reasonable at the same time. You can't like go into a job that is demanding you to do something at a certain speed and you can't do it. And you just say, well, it's your problem, because we're supposed to slow down in life. And I heard in church from our pastor that I'm supposed to like take my time to appreciate life. So I'm just going to appreciate everything I make in Starbucks, and I'm going to appreciate the work no matter how many people, you know, have to wait. And they'll say, there's the door. Thank you. You can pick up your check on the way out. Right? So we're not saying that, right? There are things within all of this that we can do as Christians, thank God, that we are taught that we can, within this kind of a world that we're living in, learn lessons that will help us to grow, that will help us to appreciate life that God has given to us, and to appreciate probably more than anything Him. The songs today really underlined this psalm so well today. Let's get into it. So what I like to do, there's a few stanzas here, and I'm going to read them again for you before we speak about each one, and we'll just talk a little bit about each stanza to understand what God is teaching through the Psalm of David. It begins, "For God alone my soul waits in silence." So here we have things that are so important here. For God alone. For God. This is the way it starts, and this is the whole thing. For God alone, only God, my soul waits in silence. Right? This whole concept is very, very hard in this world today, because first of all, most people don't believe in God. Okay, so there's a problem. But then if you were to say only God, I only listen to Him, then you'll also be facing a big backlash with things that are around us. Right? But this is the focus here. For God alone. This is actually verse 1 in chapter 62. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. Now think about that. Think about how many times you hear about your soul. You're out at the mall. You're in New York City. You're doing all these things, right? You're doing anywhere that you are, how many times do you hear people talking about their souls? You may hear an evangelist on the corner in New York screaming at people, you're all going to die, your soul is going to go to hell. If you don't believe in Jesus, you know, you may hear it there, or you come to church, or you hear different kinds of things like that, or maybe in fellowship groups. But in general, the people are not thinking about their souls. They're thinking about when they're going to get their coffee. They're going to be thinking about when they're going to get their next paycheck, or how I got to get this bus to get there. You know, all these different kind of things. But God is slowing us down. Right? He's slowing us down. He's saying, I know you're going to do all those things, but you really need me here. Right? For God alone, my soul waits in silence. And in silence, right? In silence, you're listening to Him. He has your full attention. Right? And those are all, that is really bringing this whole picture of prayer into this wonderful setting that he's teaching about. And so it's a prayer thing, right, to say that we are going to be praying to God and we're going to listen to him in silence. I have to admit to you, it's a very hard thing to do. The first thing you do when you pray is you want to talk, right? I'm going to start talking. I'm going to start, you know, getting into this. Jerry Schmoyer, Pastor Jerry Schmoyer is over in India now, and he's training pastors there. He's someone who comes to our church time to time. I think you remember him. He has a retreat, a marriage retreat. And he wrote and he said, we need more than just quick prayers. We need people to spend time in prayer to really pray for these things we're facing here. And they're facing all kind of obstacles there in India that are anti-God. Or other religions, you know, shunning Christianity. All kinds of things happening. He said, we need more than just quick one-line prayers. When you see this, I want you to devote yourself to more time for that. I haven't done it yet. You know why? Because who has time? Well, we have to make time. When we hear something like that, it needs to make an impression upon us, right? So we have to carve out the time to say, I need to do this. I remember Bruce Springsteen, who I really love. You know, I mean, I've always been a fan of Bruce Springsteen, his music. But I always remember one time I saw a documentary about him, and these people were coming to him, and they were trying to have, they said, I need to talk to you about something. I need to talk to you about this. And there were fans writing, and they were trying to, you know, all these different things. And he said, no, tonight I have an appointment with, I don't know, Star Wars, whatever his kid wanted to watch. He said, we're going to the movies and we're going to see Star Wars. And so he said, you just have to wait. This is my time with my son. Right? I always remember that, you know, that he was saying, I know you want to talk to me. I know you want a piece of me. I know everybody, you know, I love people, but today belongs to my kid. So there is this kind of a thing, but we want to be looking at God. God alone, no one else. My soul waits for him. I listen to him. He has my attention. He sees somebody, if I'm in the middle of a lot of stuff and God talks to me and he wants my time, I'm gonna like shut down the office. I'm going to be doing whatever I have to do. It has to wait. Right? He's first in my life. Why? From him comes my salvation. He saved my life. He saved me from sin. He saved me from death. He deserves my all. He's important to me. I can't say no to him. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to wait. These are all these things, tasks in our life, everything. He alone, he says it again, he alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. No shaking. I'm not going to shake because God is with me. Right? He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress, the strength. I shall not be greatly shaken. Things that can happen, but I'm not going to be greatly shaken by them. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's what Paul wrote, right? And so that's the first opening here. It's so filled with all these ideas of God alone. I wait for him. In silence, I spend time with him. He is the one who gave me my life. He's my fortress. And then it goes on to the next section. It's a little bit different. How long will all of you attack a man to batter him like a leaning wall, a tottering fence? They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. David is like amazed at these people who are after him. He's a man of great stature, right? He's a king. And he's saying to them, how long are you going to keep this up? You're like a tottering fence. He's not like saying, how long is it going to be? He's saying it in exasperation, like, what is it with you? What is it with you? Can't you see you're getting nowhere? It's nothing. You can't do anything with the way that you are. You're like this tottering fence that's about to fall, a leaning wall that is about to fall over completely. That's the way he describes these people who are living in a way that is going to go after him to bring him down. Right, the evil in the world. They just want to take him down from a high position. They pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. I was in Austria one time in Vienna, and I went there, and I was really looking forward. I've told this story before, but real quick, I went there to do this gig, and I was really excited. And we got into these rehearsals, you know, and things like that, and I saw how evil people can be. They weren't all like supportive, like, hey, yeah, you know, we're here together. We're going to be able to support each other. We're in this opera together. We're going to support one another. No, there was all of this like intrigue going on behind the curtain, you know, like people wanting to get in ahead and to wish the worst of the other people that were involved so that they would be more important, you know, pushing themselves ahead. It's really in a reality. It was really shocking to me. You know, that I was like, to tell you the truth, it got to me. I started to become very insecure. I was thinking, these people are weird. You know, they're just coming from a whole different place than I'm used to here. And then God got my attention, and I started to read God's word every day to basically survive. And by the end of it, I saw those people still scrambling around like that, and I was at peace. And I'll never forget that. But it's possible in those moments when you're really feeling you're intimidated or something is happening in life, not just from people, but in life itself, something comes at you. But this is our fortress. This is our rock. This is where we go like those little animals. We go there to God and we find strength in him, and we can face anything at all with full attention on him. We give him our lives like that, and these other people just keep on scrambling around, but we are at peace because we know him, right? Then the next section, he says, for God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. So he repeats it again. O my soul, for God alone, wait in silence. My hope is from him. Talking to his soul. Have you talked to your soul? Right? Soul. Wait in silence upon God alone. Don't try to find it in anyone else or something else. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I will not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. Somebody pointed out how many times it says here that this person, David, takes ownership. He is owned by God. My God, right? My soul is in him, in God. He only is my rock, my salvation, my fortress, my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. Over and over and over again. You hear that? You know where he stands, but he's also saying it because he believes it. He's saying, my God. Bishop Singletary says that a lot. You know, I think he reads the Bible like this and he remembers it and he keeps it and he says, my God. And he's not just saying, oh my God. He's saying, my God is awesome. My God, that's my God, right? He's my salvation, my fortress. I will not be shaken. My salvation, my glory. When you say my glory, I was looking at that today. And I was thinking about, okay, so what do we think of when we think, well, sure, God is full of glory. He's glorious and he's full of power and he's filled with this awesome light and things like that. But I think actually when we say that God is my glory, that means when we are attacked by people or we go through things that are tough in life, people will try to defame you, right? Sometimes that happens. You know, this is a preparation course, right, in this psalm. It's a preparedness. Maybe you're not feeling like you're being under pressure from other people, but it happens, right? I can tell you that it happened to me. It surprised me, but it comes, and it can be very intimidating. But God is there so that you don't feel intimidated, right? So that it's like my glory. I'm not looking for other people to tell me I'm good. I'm not going to live in my life so that people are going to say, you know, you're really talented. You're really good. And then you feel like, oh wow, thank you. That's really good. I feel good now about life. And now because you said that to me, I feel good. It only lasts a very short time. But if God comes to me and he says, you're my son, you're my daughter, I glory in you because I made you and I want you to thrive in life and I want good things for you and you can trust me because I'm there for you, I'm your rock, then that glory is the kind that I need. It's his glory. It's his looking at me and giving me worth, not depending upon what people in the world say to me. And I really believe that that helps us in a big way, because then we're not living for someone else to approve us. We're not looking for someone in our family or outside our family or anywhere in the world to say, you are really good. And we're not saying it to ourselves just to puff ourselves up. You're okay. You're good. Right? You're all right. That's a temporary survival technique. But what we're talking about is an eternal how empowerment of us because God is in us. God is working in us. He alone is the one that we wait for in silence because he alone has saved us and given us this life. So then he goes on, he says, trust in him at all times, O people. So now he turns it to the congregation, to people like us who are listening. Trust in him at all times, O people. This is an experienced statement. This is not just merely like, trust in the Lord, you know, good luck. This is someone who's speaking from experience. I have known it, and I've learned this, and I've seen it in my life. He has saved me. He has given me that security, and I've seen it worked out, and he has spoken to me. And in the prayers, he has assured me that he's there for me. I'm speaking from experience, people. Trust him at all times. All times. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us, Selah. Pour out your heart before God. Right? We don't want to live this life in some kind of a quiet way. It has to be filled with this desire for God's glory, for him to be praised, for him to have all of the things that belong to him, that the to be given all of the worthy praise that he deserves. But that is Trust in him. The best way to make feel, to bring God pleasure is to trust him. You know, I've said this before, but the best way that you can show your parents that you love them is to trust them. Obey them. Do what they think is best for you. Show them that you believe in them as parents. But show them that you believe in them, that you know that they know more than you do, and you're going to do what they say because they're there for you. Trust is an incredible thing. I trust you. I trust you. I know that you can even tell me something that is good for me that it's hard to take because I trust you. I know that you don't mean it for bad. I know that you're not trying to hurt me. I know that you're going to be there for me and you're not going to hurt me. That makes me feel very emotional because I think a lot of my time as a youth, I was afraid someone was going to hurt me. I was afraid of having someone hurt me. Not physically, but, you know, emotionally, spiritually, they're going to come in, they're going to do something to me to make me feel bad. But you meet Jesus, and then that glory that he has, and the things that he has, and because of who he is, this almighty power that has created us and given us these lives, he is the real deal. And he comes in, and he restores you, and he can lift you out of this fear and being afraid. Those of low estate are but a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances, they go up. They are together lighter than a breath. Put no trust in extortion. Set no vain hopes on robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart on them. And so now he starts to get into this new area in this psalm, right? He's talking about how vain people are, right? And the vanity in life. And he starts to use this all important concept of the breath, that we are just a breath, right? That we don't want to get puffed up about our own lives, that we have to be honest about ourselves. You know, if you ever start to feel like you are great, you know, in a bad way, and that you're proud of yourself and you're starting to be arrogant about it, then just go out and take a look at the sun and try to look directly into it. And you'll have to go down like this because you can't. And the sun is there to warm us and to bring, you know, great warmth to this world, but it's also there to measure us so that we measure ourselves against it and then we see, yeah, that is a sign that we are small, and we need to remember that, right? Someone who is, we were learning that recently, someone who is little in their own mind, right? They don't want to belittle themselves, but you have to understand your size in comparison to God. It's a very, very healthy thing to do all through life. Am I going to do what I want to do? Am I going to disobey my parents? Am I going to break the law? Am I going to do things for myself instead of for others? Well, I need to face God. I can run. I can try to run from him, but I can't run very far because he's going to pursue us and because he loves us, and he's not going to let us get away with that. He has given us a life that is going to be actually made for serving others. And so we need to keep that in mind. And these are good lessons for us to learn no matter what age we are. They are checkpoints. They are coming from someone like David who learned these lessons. And he's teaching us valuable lessons that we can put into practice, right? People are actually so slight that if you put them on a scale, even a feather, would have more weight. You follow me? So this is what David is saying. It's like, you're just a breath, okay? That is not demeaning, but from God. That is reality, and it is something that we need to learn. He is great. We are not. He is most important. We are not. God is our creator and he loves us, but he is greater. We need to bow before him. He gives us abilities. He gives us a life that we can do work for him. And we're going to look at in this last section here. But we don't get puffed up about ourselves. It is he that receives, it is God who receives the glory. In the last verses here, once God has spoken, twice have I heard this, that power belongs to God, and that to you, O Lord, belongs steadfast love. For you will render to a man according to his work. This is two great things in the verse 11. God has spoken. I've heard this twice. Power belongs to God, and to God belongs steadfast love. His power. He is powerful, and he also has unending love for us. That verse in itself is worth all the time to spend in this great psalm, to think about God. Power is his. That's a very healthy way to go about your day. Lord, you are all powerful, but you love me. Your love is greater than anything. What a wonderful God. I will serve you, and I will do works for you that you have planned for me to do. Right? All of these things come up in this kind of a way. I want to share a couple of thoughts that were very helpful advice to me as I came across this. And there's a lot said about this psalm. But one of the things that I really gained from was a poem, or actually not a poem, but something written by Martin Luther, the German reformer. He said this, bear and forbear and silent be. Tell to no man your misery. Yield not in trouble to dismay. God can deliver any day. Right? And what he's saying here is another person said it this way, talking of trouble makes it double. Talking of trouble makes it double. And what they were saying here is that we have a tendency to find it very sweet to complain about our lives with people that we know. We share our misery. That's what he was talking about. But he said, don't tell people your misery. Don't yield in trouble to dismay. God can deliver any day. So go to God and talk to him. And what he said here was, if you talk too much of your troubles to men, then you are probably apt to fall into a way of saying too little to God. If you constantly talk about your problems with people, chances are you're not talking to God. So don't talk about your troubles so much with people. Go to God and talk to him only. There are things that we gain from talking with people. That's a given. It's not saying you can't ever do that. Of course, we're going to be. But if it becomes the kind of a thing where you only talk to people, but you don't pray about it, then that's not a healthy way to live. And that, the other side of that is that if you go to God first and you speak to him about your troubles, there's a very good chance that you won't remember anything being wrong that you need to tell to someone else, because he'll have taken care of it. And that's what happened here in this psalm that David is blessing us with by writing this down. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. I'm going to go to him with my life. I'm not going to try to find a quick fix here or try to, do something else in my life that is going to take God's place. I'm going to go to the source of help, the rock of my salvation, and I'm going to give him my life, and I'm going to pour out my heart to him, because he's the one that can help me. He's the one that can really help me, and there isn't anything that he won't listen to. There's nothing. He is the greatest friend that you could ever have in the world. And so this psalm is really helping us to be able to see, in a world where people don't want to wait and there's so much rush and there's all these things and so many demands, that God is giving us this psalm today to bring things into the perspective we need so that we can thrive, that we can have an abundant life, so that we can have the things that God really is desiring for us. Are you willing? All you need to do is be willing, right? We know that it's hard, but God is just asking us today, are you willing to trust me? Are you willing to sit down with me and listen to what I have to say? I want to bless you. I want to give you the things that you can't find anywhere else. And most of all, I want to save you because you're mine. Let's pray.